So we are holding on Lamed Beis on the Aleph, second line from the bottom. More cases involving chazaka and claims and counterclaims, time for Tarin Vinitan. One person says to the other, what are you doing on this land? He says, I bought it from you. And here's the shtar that I bought it with. So in this case, most of the Mekorshim say that he didn't have chazaka, but that's fine, as long as he has a shtar, which you shouldn't need. Yeah. However, the other guy tells him, shtara zayofu. This is a forged shtar. This is a forged shtar. Now, the Rashbam brings two possibilities. Does it literally mean that he's saying it was forged, as in you actually wrote it yourself without and made up the signatures of the Edim or whatever? Or, okay, so the Rashbam starts by bringing from Rabbeinu Hananel, we don't mean literally shtar azayafa, a full-fledged forged shtar. What it may mean is a shtar amana. Namely, we learned back in Ksubas that you have the thing, you write a shtar, with everything that's fully written out. Usually it would be for halva, it could be in this case for a sale, whatever. The whole thing is written out in the usual way, in the usual format and whatever of a shtar with real Adim signing it and whatever. But it's not actually, the transaction hasn't taken place yet, and the understanding is there's an amana, there's an agreement among the one of them trusts the other that you're not going to actually claim that this is actually a valid shtar yet. So now this guy is claiming that we had a shtar.
Signed,
dated the whole thing. Yeah. But there's an amana. There was an understanding on that. So the other guy is arguing that it's a shtar zayofa. So that's Rashbam brings that. That's what Rabbi Hananel. That's how Rabbi Hananel explains the Gemara. Rashbam says himself doesn't even have to be that. It could be that it was an actual shtar mezuzah. However, the Edim themselves think that it's their valid signatures. They look at it, that they look, it's very well forged. And the reason why that comes into play is because you have the question, can you be Mekayim such a shtar?
So you
missed
the sign of the fish.
That was Rabbi Yosef, I think. Whatever, anyway. Okay, new, anyway. The point is that the point is it gets into the question on the face of it. So when he brings a shtar, it needs to be Mekoyim. So if you're going to argue that it was a completely forged shtar, if it's not Mekoyim yet, then let him go and be Mekayim it, and then it'll turn out it's forged. If not, then so that brings the two different explanations. And if it's not Mekoyim, then there's nothing to talk about yet. Go be Mekayim it first. And if he was Mekayim it, then how does the other guy have the ability to claim that it was a forged shtar? So that's what drives these two different explanations. Do we say that these are genuine signatures of these Edim? They could testify these are their signatures, but it was a shtar amana. Or do we say the signatures were so well forged that the Edim themselves think that it's their own signatures? Whatever. Anyway, Gochin Lochish Le Rabba, so the guy who brought the shtar bent over and whispered to Rabba, well, he didn't want the other guy to hear, Ein Shtar Azayafahu, yes, actually that's true, the other guy is right, it is a forged shtar, forged Ramon or whatever, Ein means yes, Shtar Azayafahu, Miu, however, Shtar Amal Yahavali, however, I did have a valid shtar originally, Ve'irkas, and I lost it, Amina, so therefore I figured in Kitai be a Dari Kolderu. So therefore I figured let me at least bring this and I'll have something to be able to use.
Oh, wow.
I'll be able to have something to use in Beis Din. So Omar Rabba, Malo the Shaker. So in that case Rabba says, fine, Malo the Shaker, he has a midui. He boy Omale Shtar Malyahu. He could have contradicted the other guy. He could have said what?
He has a midui.
He could have said it's a valid shtar. Wait. Omale Rabbi Yosef, Amai Samchas. But Rabbi Yosef says to him, why? What are you thinking to rely on? Ahai Shtara, you're trying to rely on this Shtar? Because after all, we're talking about, again, according to the general assumption over here, that he didn't have Shnei Chazaka. All there is the Shtar. Problem with that is, Ahai Shtara, Chas V'Balmahu. But this Shtar itself is worthless because it's forged. Chas V'Balmahu literally means a piece of earthenware.
A second. So if you would... if you would copy in a printer, would it be considered forged?
Yeah, because it's not the original signature today. But he himself admitted. He himself whispers to Rabba. Before we continue with the case, by the way, and before we deal with what Rabbi Yosef is objecting to the Migui, I want to mention it.
A photocopy, it's become a standard legal document.
If it's accepted, right. So it's
a little different.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Copying
it. Yeah. If you have something that's officially accepted, fine.
Yeah,
I'll tell you something interesting as a side thing before we continue with the actual case, and how the Rashbam versus Tosfos versus the other Rishonim explain what was going on over here with this Migui and what Rabbi Yosef is answering back. The Maharik says an interesting thing on this. He says, so suppose he asks a general question. What if you have something where the Dayan somehow finds out the actual details, let's say off the record or whatever, should he take that into consideration? Or should he only take into consideration what's officially said and based in? He says, based on the story, you can see there's no such thing as off the record. The guy whispers it into Rabba's ear. Rabba still has no right to ignore it and say, okay, but out in court, he said he claimed that it's a valid shtar. He only told me in my ear that it's a, no, you have to go based on all the facts that you have. There's no such thing as off the record. There's no such thing as, you know, the jury will disregard the statement or whatever. Okay, that's a side thing. Mm. Anyway, yeah.
Well, that's what they do every time they have a court case. If this person says objection, as far as I know.
So in Goyish court, yeah, they have. You know, the jury will disregard that statement. And
which
they're supposed
very
to,
funny to me.
Yes.
I have a photo of him murdering the guy. Objection, Your Honor.
Yeah,
okay, disregard that photo.
Okay, yeah.
Forget it.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so here we see an example of where halakha. Here we see an example of where halakha is much more sensible than that kind of thing. Okay.
Why do we trust him when he says, fine.
He himself is saying hajas baldin kamei yom. He himself is agreeing that he had the ability. It's true. So Rashbam starts by saying like this. Usually when we say malay l'shaker, usually when we say migui, what it means is both of the things, the original claim that he made and the new claim, can both potentially be true. Here what it is basically, the Rashbam says, it's kind of a migui that's against aging. Because where is he, what's his claim to ownership of this character? His claim is based on this shtar. The shtar itself. So you can't say what could he. You don't have a mala the shaka. You don't have a migui. He could have said it's a good shtar. He himself is moida. It's not a good shtar. And therefore the Rashbam. So you get into a number of questions. So what's exactly the problem? I mean, isn't that kind of the definition of migui, that he himself is saying one thing? He could have said something else like this. He's not saying I'm basing myself on this shtar. He's saying I'm basing myself on the original. I'm basing myself on the original shtar. So there are various explanations. For example, the Rosh understands the Rashbam to be saying basically this, that he's saying this is my land. And this that he's saying, this is my land, and this is the shtar, is all one taina. So similar to what we had before about Edim, where they say half the taina, and we have to throw out the whole taina once part of it is contradicted. Once we have contradicted that he says, I bought it with this shtar, and we say that's not, because he didn't buy it with this shtar, then we could say that we have to throw out the whole thing.
Not before that.
But no, only because he said that.
Who in his own mind with taina that he has a chazaka on a field and say that the shtar is...
No, he didn't have a chazaka on
the
field. No, but once the other guy said it's forged, then okay, he figured he's afraid of being caught out or whatever, so he figured he'll try this. Anyway, Tosfos has a different explanation Tosfos has a couple of explanations, actually. One of them is that what Rabbi Yosef means is, fine, you can say a migui, but you can't say a migui l'hoitzi mamon. You can say a migui to allow somebody to keep what they have a chazaka in, but this guy doesn't have a chazaka yet. You're going to use a migui to allow him to take away this field from the cheskes marakama, to override the cheskes marakama, the fact that the other guy originally had a chazaka of owning it. You can't do that. A number of other rishonim say similar concepts also. Then also, Tosfos points out another detail also is, another reason the migui wouldn't work over here is, in order for the migui to work, it has to be that he first starts saying the false claim, that this is the shtar I bought it with. And then say, actually, it was not, actually, it is a full, actually, it is a false shtar, but I had an original one. A migui can't work like that. A migui has to be where he could have said either claim to begin with.
Isn't there a counter migui floating around that even though this migui is like this, assuming that the migui is good,
yeah,
saying that he's only saying this because he doesn't want to get caught later. So that doesn't that erase the whole migui. Like you just said, the reason why he's doing this whole shtick is because he knows he might get caught later. He knows good
no,
today.
The fact of the matter is, it's either it's a shtar amana, we only have the word of the other guy that's a shtar amana as opposed to a real shtar, or it's so expertly forged that you can't tell the difference. So yeah, he could have gotten away with it. Anyway, Tosfos gives yet another reason also that why it doesn't work is because we talked yesterday or 2 days ago about the idea that you can't make a taina and then contradict that taina So he would be, first he's claiming it's a valid shtar, now he wants to claim it's not valid, but I had an original one, that doesn't work. Now that only works according to Tosfos' opinion that that doesn't work even if Adam didn't come in between. According to the Rimi Gash that we said the other day, that if Adam didn't come in between, you can change your taina, that wouldn't, that last answer wouldn't work. If they're learning, it's fine. You know, let them learn also. Okay. Anyway, one other thing that Ramban mentions another point also, which is again, you have to be Mekayim the Shtar. If he himself is saying that it's a forged Shtar, then the whole Kiyum on it is worthless. If the whole Kiyum is worthless, then the whole Shtar is worthless, and there's nothing to talk about. You don't have a basis for your Chazakah on the field. Okay, fine. All right. So that was the Machlokes between Ramban and Rabbi. Next, another.
In other words, whatever he says is believed.
Well, according to Rambo, what he says is believed. According to Rabbi Yosef, it's not. Wait. Another case, though, Hahuja Amal El Chavre Habli Meya Zuzi de Masiknabach. Then there was a similar case where one person says to another, give me the 100 Zuz that you owe me, Bahashtara, and here's the Shtar to show that you owe me that money. Amal El Shtara Zayafahu. Again, the other guy says the forged Shtar, forged Ramana, as the case may be. Gochen Lachash Le Rabba. Again, the case came to Rabba. And again, this Malva comes and whispers in Rabba's ear, Ein Shtara Zayafah. True, it is a forged Shtar. Miu Shtara Mal Yahavali. However, I did originally have a valid Shtar, the Irkas, and I lost it. But I'm in it. In Kitab Yadai, I called him, and I figured, let me bring at least something to base it. Maybe I can get the other guy to admit. And again, same machlokas. Omer Rabba Mala the Shaker. Again, Rabba says that why Mala the Shaker, he has a migui. He boy Omer Leshtorim Mal Yehu. He could have, after all, said that it was a valid shtar. There's nothing to contradict him. And again, Omer Le Rabbi Yosef, Amai Kosamchas, a high shtar. Again, Rabbi Yosef says, but what are you trying to base yourself on this shtar? High shtar, Chas Bavalmu. Again, this shtar is a worthless piece.
Rabbi Yosef trumps Rabba?
Wait. We're going to see who the halacha is like in this case.
The word Gachan means it's slide.
No, gochen means he bent over.
He bent over.
Gochen means his stomach. So like he leaned over,
that's
like he bent over to his stomach.
Slide.
No.
Because a snake slides on
his right, but
stomach.
No, gochen means like he bent over, like toward the over on his stomach, and then whispered to Rabba. Yeah. Okay, so we have two cases. Now, who is the halacha like in these two cases? The halacha is like Rabba as far as the first case with the land. In other words, we ignore what Rabbi Yosef is saying that it's chas b'alma, and we accept Rabba's principle that he has a valid migui. The hilchzik Rabbi Yosef is zuzi. On the other hand, when it comes to the case of the money, the second case, then the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef.
Why?
Hilchzik Rabba ba'ara. The halacha is like Rabba when it comes to land. The hecha de kaima ara tekum, because we say where the land is now is where it should stay. The machzik right now has the land in his possession. He's arguing that I originally had a shtar and I lost it, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, we can give him that nigri, even though it's true that he admitted that the shtar that he has now actually is forged. We can accept the nigri that originally he had a valid shtar, and therefore allow him to remain in possession of the karka that he has. The hilchzik of a seder of Yosef is zuzi. On the other hand, the halacha is like of Yosef. When it comes to the money, keichat the kaim is zuzi like me, because the same logic but in reverse. There you have the loiva is right now in possession of the money. The malva is the one claiming it from him. Well, if it's chas b'alma, if the shtar is worthless, you don't have an ability to take away money from the other guy on the basis of that. Now, what's the basis of this? What's the basis of this sort of compromise? So the Rashbam.
Wait, say that again. Why is it different?
Because in the one case, the Teveya, let's consider who the Teveya and the Nitra, who's the plaintiff and who's the defendant in these two cases. In the first case of the Karka, the plaintiff, the one who's saying, my voice, my ara, is the one who's not actually in possession of the Karka right now. Who's the plaintiff, who's the defendant. Rather, I take that back. Who's holding the shtar? Who has the shtar in their hand? In the first case, it's the defendant who has the shtar in his hand. He's the one saying, I did have a valid shtar, I lost it, so I wrote out this one instead, or I used the shtar amon, or whatever. In the second case, it's the plaintiff, it's the teveya, the one who brings the shtar, and says, I want to use this shtar to collect money from you.
Okay.
So therefore, the Rashbam says that what we're doing is, Rav Idi Bar Oven has a suffix, The fact of the matter is, both of them have very valid points, Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef. Which one should we follow? So therefore, basically, he says, okay, look, you know, just leave it. Each one is left, Hamoitzim Chaber L'Varayi, in both cases. As a compromise, basically, because he doesn't know who the halacha is like. Tosfos argues on that, and Tosfos says that, no, you don't need to say that. The reason is because, again, we just said before that Tosfos brought one point that you can't use a migri to take away money from somebody. So therefore, in the second case, you can't use a migri to take away the 100 zuz from the other guy. On the other hand, here, in the first case of a land, the guy is muchzik in it right now. He may not have shnei chazaka yet, but he is the one who actually has possession of the land right now. Therefore, we should leave it over there. So it's not that we don't know who has the correct thing, but rather you can't use a shtar like that. You can't use a migri like that to take away money, but you can use a migri to keep money or karka where it is right now. And therefore, that's what Tosfos says is the basis for that.
Okay. Hamotzi b'chaver alav araya, it has to be a raya. When it's not a raya, you have to leave it alone.
Right.
Raya,
so again,
edim.
No, a raya can also be a shtar, but whatever it is. The point is, again, according to the Rashbam, what it is.
That's what the other Maggid Shir said. When Hamotzi b'chaver alav araya, it's always edim. If it's edim on a shtar, or it's edim person.
Okay. So you can also have a view. You can also have a hadas bal din. You can have a number of different things.
Okay.
Whatever.
No, that's bal din for edim.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
What else is there? I don't know.
But
it has to be
like. Anyway, the bottom line is that Rashbam is saying that Rav Yehuda Oven has a suffix, and therefore he passed him this way. Tosfos says it's not a suffix, it's just that's the actual way a migri works or doesn't work. That a migri doesn't work lahoitzi, but it works lahaf. Okay. Onward. Hahu arva de amalei loiva. So now we're going to get for the time being off the topic of chazaka and deal with some other cases that just have to do with just basic cases of toyin vendita. This first one actually is going to relate back to the previous one we're going to see. So hahu arva de amalei loiva. There was an orev who told the loiva, "Havli meyazuzi de paraiti lamalva ilavach. Give me the 100 zuz that I paid the malva on your behalf." And here is the shtar. Now, we're going to learn at the end of the Masechta, that there are two basic types of orev. There's a regular orev, and then there's an orev kavla. A regular orev is, he guarantees that if the other guy defaults on the loan, I'll pay on his behalf. But the rule in halacha, unlike the Gemara mentions in a couple of places, Goyish law wasn't that way. I don't know what American law is nowadays. But whatever, in halacha, with a regular orev, you can't go after him first. You first have to go after the loiva.
Right.
If the loiva default, then you go after the orev. On the other hand, then you have another kind.
In halacha, you can?
In halacha, you can't. In halacha, you always have to go after the loiva first, if it's a regular orev. In Goyish law, the Gemara mentions in a few places, we learned in Baba Metzia, for example, that it wasn't like that. The Goyim would feel free to go after the orev first. Okay, I don't know, in American law. Okay, anyway. Then you have something called an orev kavlon, which is an orev kavlon. One definition of it is where he actually takes the money from the malva and gives it to the loiva. Then the malva is entitled to go after him first. So therefore, the Rashbam explains that here we're talking about there was an orev kavlon. Therefore, he ended up paying off the loan. And therefore the malva gave him the shtar. Now he turns to the loiva and says, well, I have the shtar in my possession. That demonstrates that I paid on your behalf. I've taken over as the Baal Chayiv. That's effectively now I've taken over as your Baal Chayiv. Pay up.
Now, does he receive it? This is totally done out of the goodness of his heart.
Maybe not.
Can he get money for it? Isn't that ribbit?
No, he didn't directly lend the money, but
So I don't remember the laws of ribbit all the way. I know we learned them.
Yeah.
But if I'm the guarantor for Zalman, can I charge him $100 for that?
So I think we actually distinguished in the Gemara over there in Ezer Neshach. I think we distinguished whether it's an Orev or an Orev Kavlon. Because the order of Kavlon can end up being the first one to pay it off. I don't remember for sure though, but whatever. Okay. Anyway,
I mean, to me it means a lot. Right. The guy is doing something out of the goodness of his heart. I think so. That they do have some kind of a halachic Remember that?
I don't remember. All right, anyway, let's continue.
Oh, they're always on the side of the lender because he's doing a favor.
Okay.
Let's
go.
For the borrower.
Okay. So anyway, other Rishonim learn that actually it didn't necessarily, other Rishonim point out, just because the Orev has the shtar in his hand isn't in and of itself necessarily a proof that he paid off the loan. The loiva could just argue that the other guy, the Malvik, gave it to you for safekeeping. Not necessarily, do I owe you the money? So therefore, they understand that the shtar we're talking about over here is not a shtar, that not the original shtar halval, but rather a shtar where the malva writes to the order of his kabal. So I received the amount from you. Well, then, therefore, the order has clear proof in his hand that he actually paid off the loan on behalf of the loiva, and therefore that he now goes and done the loiva for it. Okay. Anyway, so he comes with the shtar. So the loiva says, so what's the problem? Didn't I already pay you off? Omar, he says to the Orev. Omar, so the Orev answers back, Lab Hadrish Chaltinu Minai. So didn't you go and take that money right back from me? Which in that case we should consider it as if you never paid off the loan yet.
How can you pay back to
the money? Why not? You Levi borrowed $100 a month ago from Ruth. I was an Orev Kablon, I Shimon was the Orev Kablon, so I paid on your behalf. He gave me the shtar, therefore. You went, fine, you paid me the $100, but then you borrowed it right back from me. So therefore, you still owe me $100. Okay. Now, the loiva is not agreeing to that last, is not admitting to that last part. So, shochor of idi ba'oven l'chamei da'abai, ki hai gabnamai, so of idi ba'oven sends... Yeah. So Rav Idi Ba'oven sends a message to Abaya. What would be the din in a case like that? Now, the Rashbam points out an important detail, which is, again, we were talking before about a shtara zayafa, about a forged shtar or shtara mana, as the case may be. But here you have to consider if we're saying that Levi paid back the amount that he owed to Shimon for being the Orev, and then we borrowed it from him. Do we consider that that's a new loan, or do we continue its continuation? Do we consider its continuation of the old loan? If we say it's a new loan, then yes, the shtar is invalid. Once the shtar has been used, nimchol shibudah, the shibud on it is gone. You can't reuse it, even if all the facts are the same, even if it was the same day and everything. But if we consider it a continuation of the same loan, then it's a perfectly valid shtar. We could. Hello, what's up?
The initial shtar was about learning and being repaid.
But this is it
didn't say that he was going to.
But it doesn't matter though. Maybe this is the reason why the Rashbam insists that it has to be, we're talking the original shtar. The original shtar says that he borrowed money. Fine. The original shtar says he borrowed from Reuven. Now the shtar is in Shimon's possession. But so what? A person can sell his shtar to somebody else, and the shtar is still valid, as we've learned many times before. So if the shtar says therefore that if Shimon has a shtar in his possession that Levi owes 100, we can argue both ways. We can argue that if Levi reborrowed the 100 from him, maybe it's just a continuation of the same loan. He never lent him the money to, remember, he wasn't the original lender. He was only the Orev. He paid off on his behalf, and now Levi returned him the money, but then we borrowed it from him. Is it a continuation of the same loan, or maybe do we consider it a whole new transaction? If we say it's a whole new transaction, it's a possible shtar, because it was already used. If we say it's a continuation, then it's still a valid shtar.
And therefore can be
used. Shalachle Abaya. So Abaya answers. Abaya sends him back a message. Mighty Barley, why do you have a question? You, Rav Idi Ba'oven, of all people, should have the question. You yourself are the one who just said in the previous case that the halacha is like Rabba, that we do accept the shtar as a valid shtar when it came to the question of karka, when it came to the question of where the guy didn't have chazaka, but he claimed this is the shtar mecher. He started by claiming this is the shtar I bought the karka with, but then afterwards he admitted that it's forged, etc. And Rabba still said he had a migri, that we could accept that. But you are the one who also said the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef when it came to the money, where somebody is saying that I have a shtar, you owe me money, and the other guy says it's a forged shtar, and he admits it. Shouldn't it be the same thing over here? This is a shtar that can't be reused again. We should consider it a whole new transaction because he did pay back. And then according to this Orev, according to Shimon, the Orev, he reborrowed it.
how can you deduce that position from two others?
Because that, it's exactly the same kind of thing. That's the thing. So this is why the Rashbam says this part of the Gemara is part of what Rabbeinu Hanano uses as his proof that when we said Shtara Zayafa before, it didn't mean something that was completely forged where something never existed before. Rather, we were talking before about a Shtara Mana. Because a Shtara that was already paid off is similar to a Shtara Mana in that sense, in that it had a certain validity. It's not completely forged. These Adim actually signed it. However, it wasn't designed to be used for the purpose for which it's being used now. It was meant, which would be the same situation as here, where it's a valid Shtara, but it's not meant to be used for this new Halva. Shtara Mana is when they write a Shtar with the understanding that it's not going to be used yet. They wrote out that Pliny borrowed from Pliny, or Pliny sold to Pliny, or whatever, but it didn't actually take place yet. They're preparing the Shtar in advance, yeah, with the understanding, with the Amana, with one of them trusts the other that you won't misuse it yet.
This is why he says it's not.
So this is why he says. However, the Rashbam himself disagrees with that and says it doesn't really matter. Even if it was Zayifa, even if in the previous case it was completely forged, it's the same basic concept. So the point is that he's saying that this is something you reborrowed from me. Reborrowed implies a new halva. No, it's not a good shot.
In the previous case
it was forged, but same difference.
Yeah, reborrowing. How is it reborrowing?
In the previous case, we're not talking about reborrowing. Previous case, we're saying the shtar itself is forged.
Yeah.
You were saying the shtar is a genuine shtar, however, it's from a previous halva. Same thing, though. The point is that it still can't be used. So what are you, Rav Idi Ba'oven, asking what the halacha should be like in this case? It should be exactly the same thing. Where the money is where it should stay. So therefore, the loiver should keep the money that he has. Okay, the Gemara says, V'hani mili da'amalei hadrat, and that's the halacha. Yeah, however, V'hani mili da'amalei hadrat oizeftinu minai. However, this would only be the case if the Arev, Shimon, says, you paid me back the money, but then you came and reborrowed from me. We're not going to then consider that new thing a continuation of the previous loan. We're going to consider it a new loan, and a new loan, you can't use the old shtar.
The old shtar is invalid.
Avol omalei hadartinu nialach. However, if the orev himself says to the loiva, I myself returned you the money, machnas to have a shaifa resumti, because the coins that you gave me were no good, they were rubbed out, they were too red, the copper was too tarnished, akati itzil shibud of the shtar, then the shibud of the shtar is still valid. That's the equivalent of saying you never paid me back. Actually, it's not so simple, because you have the wording that the Rashbam uses over here is a little bit ambiguous. Is it that these coins are completely unusable, or is it that they could work al-yadad cha? You might be able to find somebody who would accept it, but you wouldn't ordinarily. The Noisa Kalim on the Shulchan Aruch discussed that back and forth. What would it be? Would it have to be that in order for him to say that, it would have to be the coins were completely unusable, or is it enough that they're just generally unusable? Even if there's a big difference. There's a big difference. If you say that
it's partially usable,
maybe you could say, well, okay, you know, he gave you coins that are usable, at least for Shas Chak. You, the order, decided, I'm sorry, I want coins that I can use over Los Angeles that'll work anywhere, therefore I returned it. Maybe that can't be considered a continuation of the same halva. I'm not obligated. You're not obligated to pay me coins that I dafka want to accept that are over the sefer. You're entitled to pay me with not such good coins, or maybe not. Maybe we say
so
that
he would be one up. Then
that's the argument. Yeah, that's the question basically. Another case, Rava Bar Sharshum, and this is, by the way, this is the only place in all of Shas where Rava Bar Sharshum appears. There's a famous verse from the Rogachover. I think I've mentioned it before. A hundred odd years ago, there was a guy who published what he claimed was the Yerushalmi Am Kodshim. Now, the Rambam writes in the introduction to Pirush HaMishnayos that Yerushalmi was written on five Sdarim, implying, well, we have four of them, Zeruyim, Moed, Nashim, Nezikim, implying that there was a Yerushalmi Am Kodshim. But apparently, at some point, it got lost. So, 100-odd years ago, somebody published what he claimed was he had found manuscripts or whatever, the Yerushalmi Am Kodshim, and it was a tremendous event in the Jewish world, and everybody was looking it over and taking positions. A little over 100 years ago, it was in the early 1900s, like 1907 or thereabouts. So everybody was in a tizzy over it. Are they genuine or not? I've heard that one of the ones who weighed in on it was naturally enough the Dogger Trevor. He said, no, can't be. They can't be genuine. Every genuine Masechta of Bavli and Yerushalmi has at least one Amora whose name is not mentioned in any other Masechta. These ones that this guy published don't have that feature. Therefore, they've got to be forgeries. And sure enough, eventually it turned out the guy wasn't who he claimed he was. The things that he said weren't. Yeah.
So this is genuine.
So this is genuine, yeah.
So this is
Robert Mark Sachs. Nafakale kola the ochel out of the ass.
He should have come back with another one. Oh, wait.
Yeah, never come on. Okay. Nafakale kola the ochel out of the ass. There came out against him a coil. There were rumors being spread about him that he is eating, that he is taking over land of Yisrael illegally. Amalei Abayas. Abayas says, come on, you're Tamat Chacham, can't be. Amalei Izzy. Tell me Izzy. Gufo de over Hechaba. What? Okay, so I didn't translate Izzy because it has two possible translations. Let me just finish the sentence. Gufo de Ubda Hechaba. What exactly happened over here? Izzy, there's two possibilities. The Rashbam, not over here, but in his Pirush on Chumash, says that Izzy means something like we'd say now or in English or so. So tell me. Some of the other Mephoshim, I think the Marshal, say that Izzy means my friend. So tell me, my friend, what exactly happened? Anyway. Omalei, so Rav Bar Shaushim tells him like this. Out of a mashkunta having the kitna ma'abur in the yasmi, I had this land as a mashkona, as a mashkanta, from the father of these yisoyimim. So we learned also in Ezer Neshech, we learned in Bava Metzia about the various types of mashkanta, where the loiva gives property of his, gives real estate of his to the loiva to take over for a certain period of time to pay off the loan. One of the types that we said that's allowed, where there's no problem of ribis in it, is what we call mashkanta de surah, because they had the minhag to do this in surah, where they figure out in advance how much, what's the average amount that such a property is likely to produce in income every year. We say with a field, it's fine, because a field is variable. It can depend on the weather. It depends on whatever factors. So you figure out the average amount. You spread it out over. You say, let's say, it was a loan of a thousand zuz. Let's say the field is going to produce on average 100 zuz of crops every year. So fine. And then you say, and you write into the document that at the end of these 10 years, the land will be returned below kesef without any further payment. Meaning the loan will be considered completely paid off, regardless whether the guy got 1,000 worth of payers out of it or less, or even if he gets more, it's not considered ribbit, because there wasn't necessarily going to be that he would, and there's no further payment. So I had it as a mashkanta. So even during the lifetime of their father already, I had shnei chazaka. Now, the havli zuzi achri, 3 years at least, yeah. The havli zuzi achri ni gabe. Now, continues Rav Bar Shashum, I had other money that this same father of the Yisraelim borrowed from me, which I didn't have a mashkanta on. So, v'achalta shnei mashkanta. So what I did is I had this field, this particular field that the coil is going on, I kept it for the whole period of the mashkanta, 3 years, 10 years, whatever it was. Amina, and now at this point I figured like this. Ima had down a la'ar al-yasmi, if I now go and return that land to the Yisoyimim at the end of the Mashkanta, like I'm supposed to, v'amina de'isli zuza achrini gabe da'avuchayin, but I tell them you should know that actually your father also owes me more money. The problem with that is, Omer Rabbanan, ha'boli parim nichsi yisoyimim le'i parim ele b'shvura. The problem is that the Rabbanan say, we have the halacha, if you're going to collect from nichsi yisoyimim, you can only collect with a shvura. Now, Tosfos points out there's actually two factors over here. Number one, they're Yisoyimim Ktanim. You can't bring a case against them in Beis Din anyway as long as they're Ktanim. Number two, even when they get older, you're going to need a Shavuot.
Are we saying that Robert, they're Ktanim?
Yes, well, that's the implication. That's the implication. Because
we'll
see.
Okay.
We'll see. Because we'll see at the end of the case. If he godly asks me, wait, we'll see. The point is, Tosfos says, Rav Bar Shaushim doesn't care, fine. If it's just a matter of I have to wait years to get paid back, fine, I can live with that. But that even at the end, I should have to take a shavua, I don't want to have to do that. A person would rather avoid a shavua if he can. So he figured, how am I going to get out of this? So Rav Bar Shaushim says, what I figured is like this. I'm going to hide the shtam mashkanta and pretend as if I actually bought this property. I have a chazaka on it after all. I have a chazaka b'chaya avoy, and I already had it 3 years in their father's lifetime. But oichla shir zuzi, then I will continue to use this property until I've accomplished that. I've had the shir of the second loan out of it in the form of payers, and I figured that would work. Because I figured like this, a migri that I could have said I bought it and mehemna, I would be believed with that, and not only I wouldn't even need a shvuah. He has Shnei Chazaka already.
But you have to start that goes on sale.
Why? The whole point of Shnei Chazaka is that after the 3 years, you're not expected to keep your shtar anymore. If he wanted at this point to claim that it was bought, that he, it could happen. We learned in Bava Metzia also when we learned about the whole concept of mashkanta. It can happen that a person takes out a mashkanta and eventually he decides to buy that very same property. It can happen. So therefore, the claim would be I had paperwork at one time, but I lost it. You're not expected. The whole point of the concept of chazaka is you're not expected to keep your shtar more than 3 years. And I won't even need a shavua because a nishba in alakakois, because you don't take a shavua on claims of karka anyway. Anyway, I also have a chazaka. In this case, the claim would be that he bought it while their father was still alive. So ech v'shev ashtam mashkanta v'och l'shir zuzi, the migudi bo'ina aminu l'kuchi b'yodim heina, given that if I were to claim that I bought it, then I would have been believed without a shvur, ki aminu isli zuzi gabay chum heimina. So I figured, by the same logic, if I claim that instead I'm holding on to it, not because I bought it, but because your father still owed me X amount, and I want to consume that from it before I return it, I figured I can also be believed with that. So therefore, I figured I'll be able to do that. And this way I don't need to have a shvua. Different Rishonim also point out other things that he figured he'd gain from that. One of them is that this way, when it comes to the payrus afterwards, he will have already had the payrus. If they want to argue, he shouldn't have been entitled to them. It would be up to them to bring the raya that he, when they get older, let's say years later, when they want to bring the case to Beis Din, if he already has had the payrus by that time, they're the ones who are going to have to bring the raya that he shouldn't have had that they won't, because he has a shtar in his hands that they owed him money. It also makes it this way it's not metalpulin of Yisoy, man. He figured there's a number of things he can gain from doing it this way. Amale, so Abaye answers him, sorry, but that doesn't work. You're not going to be able to get away with a claim that you bought it. Because after all, there is this coil. It's well known that you originally took this land over only as a mashkanta. As long as there is that curl that it's land of Yisraelim, that the mashkanta is over, then you, if you wanted to claim that you bought it, no, we wouldn't be able to say, well, 3 years of chazaka have passed, you're not obligated to keep your shtar anymore. The fact that you know there's a curl going on over here, you would be responsible to hold on to your shtar. If you don't have that shtar, then that's that whole, and you obviously don't, so you pack it in by it, that's not going
to
work.
You have to keep the shtar as long as there's a curl.
Yeah.
Indefinitely.
Yeah.
So then it negates.
Eventually the curl will be settled one way or the other. The matter will come to Beis Din. You'll be mekayim your shtar or whatever it is, and then from then on you'll like that, there's a curl that there's a shtar over here that was mekuyim, and you'll have your shnei chazaka.
You can apply that to anything else.
As soon as there's a coil, you will take care of getting your shtar certified, and then you'll start your 3 years from there. Yeah.
What if you had 3 years,
and then
you lost your thing, and you still have like another?
Once 3 years have passed, then it doesn't matter. Coil doesn't do anything against 3 years chazaka. Anyway, Tosfos gives a different answer.
So this coil was in the middle of the shit.
It was, no, it was after the Shnei Chazaka, but the Shnei Chazaka were on the Mashkanta.
Right.
He's trying to claim that he bought it, but you don't have the ability to do that against such a coil. Because everybody knows that those 3 years originally were not as a purchase, but rather only as a Mashkanta. And Tosfos also adds, by the way, another detail, that we can't say a migui because once there's a curl over here, you wouldn't be able to lahoiz panecha. You wouldn't be able to have the chutzpah to go against that curl and say no. But nevertheless, the curl is false.
That's what he did, though.
He figured he could, but now there's a curl, so that Abaye is telling him it's not working. Ella, so therefore he figured it would work and it didn't.
Yeah, so he had the chutzpah to do.
No, but he wasn't going against the curl. The curl, he figured to do this, but then the curl came out to contradict what he's trying to do.
He knew there was a curl.
He didn't know there was a curl to begin with. He started by doing this. Then the curl came out.
Well, from the beginning, it came out.
Yeah. Nafaka le'kola k'ol ha'ya.
It
came out. Ella, no. So Abaye tells him, all you can do is zila hadrini alayu. You just have to go return the land to them. L'chigad v'yasmi. And then when the Yisraelim get older, because now they're children, ishtoy dinibadayu, then you can take them to a din Torah. And at that point, yes, you're going to have to swear because I've already part of Nixie Simon.
What are you
going to
claim that at that point?
They're going to claim at that point that your father owed me X amount of money and you need to pay.
Without Star?
No, he still has his Star. He still has his Star that the guy owed him money. The additional amount, sure.
So the wage it wasn't so bad.
That's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Don't mess with that.
Right. Another case. Shrividir of Idi Ba'ovin Shachiv. A relative of Rav Idi Ba'ovin passed away. Yet again, we have Rav Idi Ba'ovin over here. A relative, maybe that's what the Gemara is bringing in this case. A relative of Rav Idi Ba'ovin passed away. The Shavak Dikla, and he left over a palm tree that was going to go to his nearest relative. In this case, Tosis brings two possibilities. One is that this guy didn't have children, so therefore, as we will learn in the 8th parak of Amasekhta, we're going to learn about all the details of Yerusha. So it had to go to his nearest relative, what's defined as a nearest relative, Halacha. Or the other possibility, Tosfos says, is he had children, but let's say he decided that this one particular palm tree should go to some other relative. You're able to do that, as we'll learn over there about Matnas Shchidman or whatever.
And where was it actually drawn on this property?
Not in either, not in any, in the property of the guy who died. Preposterous, I don't know. Or maybe not, maybe it was only a tree that he bought in somebody else's property, I don't know. Anyway. Rav Idi Ba'ovin Amar Anok Kariv Netfei. Rav Idi Ba'ovin claimed that I'm the closest relative. Bahu Gavra Amar Anok Kariv Netfei. Some other guy also claims that I'm the closest relative.
They don't agree to what he said.
No, each one is claiming. Each one is claiming that he's a closer relative. L'seif Odi Le'di'il Kariv Netfei. In the end, so what happened? Since we didn't know which, so that Ashvam learns the case like this. That Ashvam learns that. Since we didn't know which one is the closer relative, so we had one of these cases of Kol Da'alim Gvar. That whichever one was stronger grabbed it, and the other guy was stronger, so he ended up taking over the tree. L'soif oidile de'il kodiv tvei. Eventually, though, a year or two later passed, and the other guy admitted that Rav Idi Ba'ovin is in fact a closer relative. Oifmer Rav Chista biyade. So Rav Chista handed over the tree to Rav Idi. Amalei, so now at this point, Rav Idi turns to Rav Chista and says, "Lahedali peri de'ocha ma'hu yomad hashta." In that case, not only I should have the tree, that guy should be reimbursing me for the fruit that he ate from then until now. He ate them shaloi kadin. Amar, so Rav Chista says, "That not zeru sha'omim al of adam gadolhu." Is this the kind of person who they say on him that he's a great person? Meaning, what kind of an argument is that for you to make? Aman kasamichmar. After all, who are you relying on that you're entitled to the tree? Ahai, you're relying only on this guy. Well, haka amadan namakarav tvei. Isn't that guy arguing? Hasn't that guy been arguing all this time that he is the closer relative? So what does that mean? The Rashbam learns like this. That he's admitting right now is not necessarily saying that he agrees that you're in fact the closer relative. If he's admitting, we have to consider it's as if he's just giving you the tree voluntarily. You, Taka, didn't have a right to it and didn't, because Kol Da'alim Gvar, and that's how it was going to remain indefinitely, except the guy had a conscience or whatever it is and decided to give it to you as a matana. Very well. Why are you entitled to the payrus? Up until now, he was eating the payrus legally. That was the original thing, right? No, they tried. They tried. Neither apparently, what it was is at the beginning, neither one had, according to the way we're learning from the Rashbam, we didn't have Edim on either side.
Maybe we're thinking of, what the other side wants
to do. So whatever it is, they didn't have Edim.
On a field, you have to concede on a terrace.
No, because that's the thing. The Rashbam understands that by conceding, he's not necessarily saying, yes, you're the closer relative. He may just be saying, you know what, fine, I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you as a gift. Fine.
Where do you get that from?
Because, not necessarily.
The Gemara says,
I das piv. All he's doing is admitting. But his admission amounts to, he could have not admitted, and he would have kept it forever, because Kol Da'alim Gvar is valid. There's a valid way of passing the din. In this case, he voluntarily decided to say that fine, but that's that. You're only entitled to it, so as if it was a matana. The Rashbam brings another explanation from Rabbi Hanano, which he says I don't like, is that but
the Rashbam doesn't like that explanation.
Right. The Rashbam brings no. This explanation that we just had is what the Rashbam does like.
Right.
Then he brings from Rebbe Hananel another explanation, which he says I don't like. However, Tosfos discusses it at some length and agrees with it. That what happened is what happened is there were actually Adim involved. There were Adim involved. So one or the other of them is the relative.
Closer relative,
right? In this case, So what it is like this. According to the second explanation that Ashbam brings is when the Adim came, they didn't necessarily say that your Adim didn't say you're a closer relative and he's not. All they said is you're a relative. That didn't clarify what his status is. So therefore the argument is he all this time could have had a migri, basically, to say ein achli v'didi achli, that which is a similar topic which the Gemara is going to talk about later. He could say, sure, I ate the food all this time, but it was my food, I was entitled to it. There's no Adim contradicting him to this or that. Therefore we can't force him to pay back because what are you basing yourself on? You're only basing yourself on his admission that he ate that food. Very well, he's claiming he ate that food on the basis he was a closer relative.
Why don't we say more simply that the ownership, the definitive ownership, goes back to the time of the admission rather than to the time of the initial?
Well, that's essentially what the Rashbam is saying. So,
but it's still clearer to say it this way. Your ownership was defined at the day the other guy...
Okay, but that really depends on the girsa over here. Again, it's a matter of girsa, it's also. And again, Tosva says that actually they do like the second explanation better. It's not talking about that the guy eventually admitted to Rav Idi that he's a closer relative, but rather that Rav Idi brought Adim that he is a relative. There was still no... saying that he's closer... We're just saying, you, Rav Idi, we know are relative. The other guy, we don't know one way or the other. So therefore, again, Rav Chisda is telling him you have a migrant.
But the difference between the two cases, the one with the relative, the Adim, and the one without, is that without the Adim, you have to decide the case at the time of their Adar. With the Adim, it's from the beginning.
No, because, if there were no Adim, according to Rashbam's first understanding of it, according to his preferred understanding, because there never were Adim in the first place, therefore it was just called the Alam Gvar.
Right.
Once we did call the Alam Gvar, that's how it remained.
Yeah.
That other guy is entitled to that tree, and that's that. Later on, he's mother,
that's
fine. That creates a new reality.
It's with the Adim that the case is not the same. With Adim, Carmen said he's the closest relative. And
no, they're not saying he's the closest relative. That's the point. They're saying, if they said he's the closest relative, sure, then of course we have to go retroactively. But they're saying, we testify that Edi Ba'alvin is a relative of this guy who died and left the tree. This other claimant over here, we don't know. He might be a relative, he might not. He might be closer than Edi Ba'alvin, he might not. We don't know. So therefore, on that basis, we can give that guy a migrat. Sure, we say that now Rav Idi is saying, well, I have Adim that I'm the relative. But not necessarily the closest. So Rav Idi is arguing that I should be entitled to the payrus as well, since the other guy did admit that he ate the payrus. That's according to that girsa. When we say that the guy was moider, what we mean is not that he was moider that Rav Idi is a closer relative, but he was moider that he ate the payrus. And Rav Chisda tells him, no, the guy has a migri on those payrus. The tree itself, fine, he has to give you, but the payrus, not. Okay, before we continue, by the way, we're going to see Abaya and Rava disagree with that. Tell you an interesting thing that I saw. Rav Chisda is saying sort of dismissively about Rav Idi Ba'alvin, is this the person they say on him he's an Adam Gadol? So where do we ever find that anybody said on Rav Idi Ba'alvin that he's an Adam Gadol? So the answer is like this. The Gemara tells us in the Sefer Shabbos that if a person is careful with the mitzvah of Shabbos candles, they're going to be zeichet the children of Tamar Chachamim. This is why when the women light Shabbos candles, or whenever you have men who light Shabbos candles, if it happens, and whenever they say a tefillah, their children should be Tamar Chachamim. It's a traditional thing based on that. So the Gemara tells us over there in Shabbos that one time Rav Huna passed by the house of Ovin the carpenter, and he saw that he had a lot of lights in his house for Shabbos. And Rav Huna said, on the basis of that, this family is going to have children, or is going to have two children who are great Talmid Chachamim, and they were Rav Chiya Ba'alvin and Rav Idi Ba'alvin. Therefore, now years later, Rav Chisda is saying, Rav Huna said all those years ago that you're supposed to be an Adam Gadol. What kind of an Adam Gadol comes up with such an argument?
Well, what was his argument again?
His argument is, again, according to the Rashbam, the guy admitted to me, therefore that I'm the closer relative, therefore retroactively I should have the food. And Rav Chisda tells him that no, because all he did is, by being moided, he's just effectively giving it to you as a gift now. What happened before is not relevant.
The fruit.
Yeah. And according to...
And the tree.
Yeah. And according to Rabbeinu Hanano, Rabbi Edi brought Adim that he is a relative, not necessarily the closest one. That Adim didn't know one way or the other what the other guy's status is, but therefore on that basis we take away the tree from him, but he has a migri on the fruit.
The other one didn't bring anything.
On the previous fruit.
On the fruit of the 2 years, right, of the 1 or 2 years.
Oh, so he doesn't have to pay back.
That's
okay,
what the fifth is. However, Abaya and Rava le svirlu hodurchista. However, Abaya and Rava disagree with the statement of Rachista. They say kiven to Odi, Odi. Once he was moida, that up until now he had it illegally. Odi, then he was moida, and he should be paying for those
So he is a great man after all.
He's not just saying that he has the right of the tree, but he's saying, okay, since he's also relative, I have to give him to you now.
Yeah, well, that's according to the Rashbam. We have to say, Kivin to Odi, according to the Rashbam's explanation, the other guy was Moida, which is the gears that we have in front of us in the Gemara, that he is the closer relative, and therefore that. So not like Rav Chista saying that by being Moida that effectively he's the same, fine, forget about it, I'll just give it to you as a present. No, we have to say what he's saying, we have to take it at face value. You are the closer relative, therefore you were entitled to those payers. And according to Rabbeinu Hanano, according to the explanation of Rabbeinu Hanano, it means we don't give that guy the migri.
Did we see the... You said we saw Edi Barabin.
Rabbi Edi Barabin, yeah. And
where?
Rabbi Edi Barabin over here, who was the one who said that halacha like Rabba, that halacha like Rabbi Yosef.
How can we talk about aging when Abai says, Kinam Edi?
Because according to that, it means the guy was moida that he ate those 2 years of fruit.
Without aging.
No, in other words, there's Edim that Rabbi Edi Barabin brought that he's a relative, according to Rabbi Hanano. And the other guy further was moida that he ate the fruit during those 2 years.
By the way, we've got such short.
I know. Well, that's why I figure we'll just get to the bottom of this Amud and then we'll.
Today is Lamed.
Today is officially supposed to be Lamed Dalet. I know that. So we'll just get to the end of this Amud.
Yeah, I know. Tomorrow we'll definitely.
I know that.
Ahead of schedule.
All right. Another case. Now getting back to Chazaka. Zay Mashalavosev is Zay Mashalavosev. So one person claimed that this land belonged to my fathers. The other one belongs that it claimed to my father, that it belonged to my fathers. Now, we had a similar case. Because we're going to see, there's a little bit of a nuance. Hold on. Because we're going one after the other, different cases. But Hai Aiti Sadi Davahosi, who the one brought Edim, the one person brought Edim that it belonged to his fathers. And here, the Rashbam points out a key detail that makes this one different than the previous one. Namely, the Edim say that it belonged to his fathers until they died. So not like in the previous case on Lamed Aleph, where we could reinterpret it to mean that my fathers bought it from your fathers or whatever. No, here, of necessity,
say in the Gemara until they died. Or
the Gemara doesn't say, but the Rashbam understands it that way, because otherwise it would be the same as the previous case. Wait, let's learn the case, and I'll tell you also that the Torah supposed to read has a different understanding of the difference between the two cases. Okay. So, Hai Aiti Sadi Davosi, who the one person brought Edim that it belonged to his fathers until they died, Vahai Aiti Sadi to Ocho Shnei Chazaka. The other one brings Edim that he had it for Shnei Chazaka. So, Omer Rav Chista, Malo the Shaker. So, Rav Chista says that the one who has Edi Chazaka, when he started by claiming Shalavosai, he has a migri on that. Iboy Omer Lemi Noch Zvinte Vachotia Shnei Chazaka. He has Edim for his Chazaka, after all. All he would have had to say is, fine, I'm not contradicting your Edim. It belonged to your fathers, fine, but I bought it from them. I'm partially contradicting them because they say it belonged to your fathers until they died, and I'm counterclaiming that I bought it from them, but still. So, wait. So he argues that...
You could say that he bought it from them. He got it.
From the father.
From the father. He got it from his fathers.
What, the mashkanta?
No, here. The guy that... The son of the fathers got it from his fathers, and then this guy bought it from him.
Oh, he bought it from the son.
He bought it from the son. Yeah, okay. That's what we're saying. He could have said, I bought it from you. Right, sorry, I misread it. He could have said, I bought it from you, and I bought it Shnei Chazaka. I'm not contradicting you. Very good. I'm not contradicting you, Adam, at all. Fine, belonged to your fathers until they died. Then I bought it from you. What's the problem? However, Abaye and Rava is Svirulu Hodir Rav Chista. However, again, Abaye and Rava disagree with what Rav Chista is saying, because Mali L'Shakab Makam Adam Layamrinan. You can't give the guy a migui when there are Adam. Meaning, in other words, so the Rashbam.
What are you saying?
you want to give him a migri, that he, instead of saying that was shalavoisai, I could have instead said that I bought it from you. That fine, it belonged to your father throughout his lifetime, and then I bought it from you after he died.
But
yeah, why not? It's 3 years already have passed. I have 80 chazaka. I'm not expected to keep a shtar anymore. You claim you didn't sell it to me. Fine, bring proof. I have a chazaka. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
The Aedis
are just saying that it belonged to his fathers. The problem is the problem in this case is that his original claim of Shalavoisai is contradicted by the Aedim. His original claim, Shalavoisai, is contradicted by the Aedim. You want to say, well, he could have instead, Shalavoisai, he could have said that I bought it from you, Vachatir Shnei Chazaka. Okay, but Aedim are contradicting the original claim he made. That doesn't work. You can't do a migri in a case like that. They're saying that it belonged to his father. Yeah.
That's
the key point. Yeah. The Tosfos really has a different explanation of the difference between this and the previous case. He says it is actually the same kind of case. You don't have to say that Shalavoisai, you don't have to say that it's Aedim, that it was Shalavoisai, means that they owned it for their whole life. However, the difference is, in that case, the guy went on to claim something else, to claim, when I said Shalavoisai, I didn't literally mean that it belonged to my father, I meant that I consider myself as secure in it, as if I inherited it from my father, as we learned that. The point is, therefore, the Tosfos really explains, what Abaye and Rava are saying is, fine, if the guy comes up with that claim on his own, okay, we have to give it some credence. But if he doesn't come up with it on his own, it's not one of those cases that Toyin in Lekeach or Toyin in Leyosh or whatever. Beis Din should not bring up that claim on their own. Did you maybe, by saying Shalavoisai, did you maybe mean to say that you consider yourself a security, et cetera? If he doesn't volunteer it himself, we shouldn't volunteer it on his behalf. That's the difference. Another case. One person says to another, what are you doing in this land? He says, I bought it from you. I had it for Shnei Chazaka. However, he was only able to bring Eidos that he had been there for 2 years, not three. Well, that's no good then. You need Eidim for 3 years of Chazaka. So Rav Nachman says in that case, the land has to be returned and the payers have to be returned. Because now, there's no chazak. Okay, so here also, the Rashbam points out, similar to the case before, it does have to be that there were Eidim that he had those payers. If he himself just admits on his own that I ate those payers, then again, then we would say that what the Rashbam says is as follows. If there are Eidim that he ate the payrus, then he has to return the full payrus of 2 years. If he's moida on his own, so he, remember, is claiming that I bought the land from you and then I ate the payrus. Well, then, what it is, of course he'll have to return the land, but as far as the payrus, we will make him swear a shvuat hesis. He can swear a shvuat hesis that he bought the fruit. He can swear a shvuat hesis that he bought the fruit, because he has a migri in that case. He could have said, I only ate a little bit of payrus. So therefore, if he instead says, I ate a lot of payrus, but it was mine, then it's not a mali the shakir b'makom edim. There's no edim contradicting him that he didn't buy it. He lost his shav and he only has edim for 2 years. Fine, but there's no edim contradicting him. So therefore, you can't say like Abaye and Rava said before. You can't give him a migur b'makom edim. Give him the odi anything like that. No, he'll swear a shvuah tesis that he can keep the payrus. Yeah. If there's no Aedim, again, if there's Aedim,
then yes. You say there's no Aedim. He's moida, that is,
that's
just 2 years.
That's just 2 years. So no. Not, there were Aedim that he was there for 2 years. He's claiming he was there 3 years. All he found was Aedim for 2 years.
2 years.
What we're saying is, if there's no Aedim that he ate the fruit, then he can swear a shvuat hesis that he bought the fruit, and we will believe him. If there's Aedim that he ate the fruit, then that doesn't work, then he has to pay back the fruit. Amr of Zvid, however, of Zvid says, Imtan va'amal peiros yaradti nemon. However, if he l'chachila claims, when the guy comes and tells him, my boy is b'hai ara, if instead of answering, I bought it from you, if he instead l'chachila starts by saying, I came into the field to begin with as an oris, for example, where I'm entitled to a certain percentage of the payrus, or let's say, for example, that I bought only the payrus, I bought the payrus for the next 10 years or whatever, nemon, then we would believe it.
Yerati
means I went down into the field. Then we will, then the same kind of thing, we'll make him swear a Shvuat Hesed, and then even if there's Edim that he ate the fruit then we'll say that we can believe him with a Shvuat Hesed. Why? Lav mi omer Rabbi Yehuda, because isn't it similar to the case that Rabbi Yehuda said, Hai man de noket magla betuvliya, if somebody is holding a sickle and a tuvliya, the Rashbam says two possibilities what tuvliya is. One is it means a rope, like to climb up onto the tree, and the other is it's a basket to put the fruit in. For Omar, and he said, Ezo egdere l'dikla de planya, I'm going to cut the fruit off of the palm tree that belongs to Pliny, the Zavna Nihali, because he sold me the fruit of that tree, Mehaman, then we believe him. Why? Alma lechotze finish to gather dikla de la bilay, because a person is not going to have the chutzpah to chop down fruit from a tree that doesn't belong with him. Now, the Rashbam explains this is only if we know that the owner was moicha, then of course we can't allow him to, otherwise nobody's trees are going to be safe. But if we don't know that if the owner has not been moicha yet, then we would assume a person doesn't have such a chutzpah. So in the absence of any macha from the owner of the tree, we will allow him to do that. But this is because he's claiming l'peiros yaradi. He's claiming that I bought the fruit to begin with. So that's the similarity, in other words. Doesn't matter. You don't need chazaka on peiros. You'll need chazaka on karka.
Because there's no...
Hochanami. So similarly over here, l'chotze finish, l'mecha peiri, d'lavi. Same thing over here. A person is not going to have the chutzpah to go eat fruit that doesn't belong to him. Therefore, if Hilachachila claims the Peiros Yaradi and there's no counterclaim for the Balabas, good, we'll believe him. As opposed to, again, if he said that I bought it and ate it for Shnei Chazaka, where then he needs to bring Edim for his Shnei Chazaka.
That's why the expert criminal, they walk away from the crime real slowly.
Tosfos points out, by the way, I mean, in Rabbi Yehuda's case, he's actually saying Ezel Exeter the Dicta of the Planya. He's actually saying, I'm going to harvest the dates from the... Tosfos says it doesn't even matter even if he doesn't say it. The point is, the very act of going to harvest dates from somebody else's tree would be a chutzpah that a normal person is not going to do. So it doesn't matter whether he says it or not. That's hence the similarity to what Rav Zvid is saying. So the question is, Ihochi Aranami. So in that case, why don't we say the same thing about the land itself? If he argues that I bought it from you, again, a person shulahuda doesn't have a chutzpah to go take over land that doesn't belong to him. The answer is Ara Amrinan Le'achli Shtara. Yes, but the difference is when it comes to land, we will tell him, fine, you claim you bought it, show your shtar.
That's only
a bit here. Yeah, right.
What's the chiddush? We know that.
Well, the question is, Ihochi Peiri Nami, then in that case, okay, why don't we say the same thing with Peiris? And the answer is, the answer is, Shtar LePeiri, like Abdi Inchi, because people do not write a shtar for Peiris. People don't usually write a shtar for things such as Peiris, therefore we have to take him at his word and assume that a person doesn't have such chutzpah. As opposed to with land, we have an alternative. Let him show the shtar.
And they write in the halacha,
can you ask the shtar for the Peiris?
No, you can say, nobody writes shtar for Paris. You can't expect me to show
it. No, shtar for Paris. The shtar then owns the land to prove that the Paris...
That's the thing. If he wants to claim that the land really is mine and I shouldn't have to give back the land or the Paris of the 2 years, he has to show his shtar. He has to show his shtar. He only has Edom for 2 years, therefore either he finds Edom for the third year or he has to bring a shtar. If he has no Edom for the third year and no shtar, then too bad. Yeah. Tosfos points out, by the way, again, that when it comes to the Peiros, Tosfos learns a little bit differently than Rashbam as far as the case where the person claims I bought the Peiros and then says I was going with the knife and the basket or whatever to collect him. It only works, Tosfos says, for what he collected up until now. Unlike the Rashbam who said that it depends on whether the guy is Moicha or not, the Tosfos learns that rather we say that we will allow him to keep what he has so far, but if he wants to collect any further, he's going to need to bring a proof for it. So therefore, Tosfos says, by the same token, when the Gemara is asking about Karka, that of course he has to return. Of course he has to return the karka. But the question is, why doesn't he have the ability to say, but the peiros that I already ate? And the answer is because in the case of peiros, where he bought them together with the land, he should be showing a shtar. And if he can't show that, then it means that we can't accept that he had the right to the peiros in the first place. As opposed to if he only bought the peiros, nobody writes a shtar for peiros, and therefore that's that.
What's interesting by Tosfos that he's in the middle of collecting things that he supposedly bought. You let him keep half of it, and the other half is still on the tree. He has to go and prove that he bought it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because I would say, either let him give the whole thing back or let him take the whole thing. Either he's right or he's wrong.
Okay, Tosfos does make the distinction also that really, you shouldn't need this whole question of lechatz finish anyway. Usually, whatever metaltalin a person has in his possession are usually assumed to be as a person has a chazaka and the metaltalin he has in his hand.
Yeah.
So Tosfos says, let's say, for example, he put them in a reshus in somebody else's reshus. Let's say. So then he doesn't have mukhtif in him right now, so therefore you need this argument of lechatz finish in order for it to work.
Chatzif is what?
He doesn't have lechatz. Yeah. Okay.
It's interesting because this halacha, the 1 minute halacha,
yeah.
He went over, if someone wants to go into the mikveh, their mikveh pass,
mm-hmm.
And you have one, and he says, can I go behind you? You're not supposed to ask him if he paid for the month. So you're supposed to let him in and assume that he's not having, maybe. That's what he said, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a lot of trouble because it was the mikveh.